Welcome back, family. This week's guest is a man who is doing everything in his power to build a better community for the neighborhood he grew up in and all the neighborhoods just like it. Pierre Laguerre, the founder and CEO of Fleeting, is an entrepreneur who has faced many obstacles and pitfalls on his path to success, but has overcome everything life threw at him. From humble beginnings as an immigrant to America, he has persevered through hardship and created a thriving business that he is using to help other people achieve a path to financial freedom, regardless of economic status or educational accolades. His story and his passion are truly inspiring, and we are more than proud to say that he's part of the family. Check out our conversation, and then check out his business, Fleeting, and follow him on Instagram. This one is extremely timely, and we're glad that we were able to share it with you. Let's go. Welcome back, family. We're in June now. A lot of us have been experiencing this new world since about March. And as part of our continued commitment to make sure that you guys are both entertained and educated, I want to introduce you to a new family member today. I'm really excited about this one. As if you've been a longtime listener, you know that I get excited about the people who can speak to a world that a lot of us may not have known we had entry to or access to, and who want to help the community build wealth and knowledge. And this, what do you want to be? You want to be a brother, a cousin, uncle?
Man, I'm all the above, brother.
All right. So our new family member is out here helping people change their lives. And that's not hyperbole. That's not me just hyping him up. Those are real words. And I want him to introduce himself, tell everybody how he got to where he is and what he does.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me here, Kai. Hi, everyone. My name is Pierre Laguerre. I'm currently the founder and CEO of Fleeting. And Fleeting is a marketplace that gives shippers and motor carriers access to vetted CDL truck drivers to operate their trucks around the clock 24/7. A little bit about my background. The reason I got into tech and logistics is pretty much for me. I was born and raised in Haiti. Came here when I was 15 years old. Moved in Brooklyn with the idea of becoming a doctor and just moving into the hood that actually just changed overnight. I went from dreaming of becoming a doctor to just dreaming of staying alive, simply because I saw what it was like living in those communities around the early 90s. It was nothing but gangbanging, drug dealing, streets was filled with drug addicts. And I wanted a way out of that community. I didn't want to become a statistic. I didn't want to become a product of that environment. And I was always looking forward to come out that community. I did go to college, study electrical engineering for about a year. And unfortunately, due to financial hardship, I had to drop out of college and decided to become a truck driver. And this is my journey now, and I think it was the best decision that I've made.
So full disclosure, off air, we had a very interesting conversation, and I want to bring a little of that onto the mic. So we were discussing the fact that there is a definitive point in a lot of people's lives where they have to make a decision about just choosing between a career and a series of jobs that will get you through. And that so often now, the key to getting past that door for a career and whatever that life offers you is education. You said that you went to college for just even a little bit, but you also found an industry that's not closed to people who haven't gone and got a master's degree and a PhD or all the other things they use to kind of filter out the people to get those jobs. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, for me, another thing I want to point out, too, is that, you know, just like we're saying that sometimes us as a people, we need that word of encouragement. And I think my professor and my college actually did it for me. After I dropped out of college, I worked at XPO Logistics, and I went on to work at a company called Performance Food Group. And at that company, I was doing food deliveries in schools and hospitals and restaurants. And luckily for me, I started doing food deliveries in the same college that I was going to. So I used to hide and didn't want my professor to see me, didn't want to run into my old friends, simply because I didn't want them to think that, you know, I was a loser, because now here I am, the delivery guy at the same school that I was going to. And I remember one day I ran into my professor, and he said, "Pierre, what's the matter? Why are you hiding?" I said, "Well, you know, I dropped out of college, and I didn't want to look like a loser in front of everyone." And he said, "Well, let me ask you this. How much are you making a year?" So I was doing about 90K a year at the time. He said, well, look, half of these kids is going to graduate and not going to make 90K here. So I want you to own it, be prideful, and be the best trucker you can be. And I'm saying this to say that message really resonated with me in a sense where a year later, I purchased my own truck and became an owner-operator and did well as an owner-operator, even parked up my truck and studied supply chain logistics for about 6 months at Wagner College just to get a little bit more understanding of the industry. And then from there on, I went on to build a staffing agency to $2.5 million in revenue in 2 years and also built a trucking company to $1.7 million in revenue in its first year. So I'm saying all this to say is that, you know, sometimes we kind of look at trucking like, okay, well, this is the thing that, you know, nobody wants to do, right? Which it is. People also have this bad stigma around trucking that think that, you know, only ex-convicts drive trucks or only people that's pretty much out on their luck that drive trucks. But once I got into trucking myself, it became really interesting to see that, you know, there is average regular human being that was doing this simply because their dad was a trucker. Their grandfather was a trucker. Their family grew up on trucking. So it was much more like a family tradition to them. And you have people that actually do it for the passion as well. So when you tie that up and then you tie that with the person, you know, with the highly educated, to me, what the biggest barrier I see in there, when you take those two classes of people and you put them in transportation logistics, what happens is the person, yes, that didn't have that education, that didn't go, you know, that didn't have the ability to go to a good college or a great college or even college period, even say, hey, look, he has a degree. He was able to study supply chain or even get an MBA to understand business. When you take that individual and you match it with a driver now that don't have those skills compared to the person that has the master's in logistics, the big barrier for me is that that driver always knows trucking much more on a micro level, which is really, really important. It's not to say that we don't need the master's student. We don't need the MBA guy that's going to read the spreadsheet that's going to kind of tell us exactly how to navigate the business. But also the truck driver, the guy that's in the operation every day, also brings values into that space. So for us, I think it's very important that we tell the world, let's not look at trucking and say, okay, well, this guy's a nobody because he's a truck driver, or this guy right here, he owns a truck and maybe, you know, he was smart enough to be educated. What we realize is majority of trucking companies that are owned, 90% of trucking companies are owned by small, regular individuals, regular guys that was drivers that started their own business in trucking. And 90% of those guys are what makes up supply chain logistics. So I think it's very important that we understand the both value that both bring, whether you have a master's degree and you could be the best guy at, you know, creating analysis, being the best guy at being able to build spreadsheet, understand the financial life of a business. But at the same token, I believe you need the operational guy. You need the guy that understands the ins and outs. A supply chain. So I think both parties are highly needed in any industry.
I want to come back to that, but I have a question that came about from what you were saying. Where does that barrier come from? That artificial mental barrier that's developed between us thinking that the person that just graduated from college is better than the person who has 4 years of experience of actually doing the job. Where does that come from?
Number one, I mean, Dak, several places. Number one, society, right? Society put that stigma on somebody. If you look at my fingernails could be dirty because I'm a mechanic. You understand? Your fingernails might be a lot cleaner because you work in a corporate office. So society put that stigma on both of us now because you're a much more clean working man. But the fact that I'm the man that's working in the sun, that make you feel a lot valuable than I am, right? Because I am the mechanic and you are the guy that either owned the mechanic shop or that owned whatever it is. But the thing is, society create that stigma to make you feel like you're less of a being simply because you don't have that diploma, you don't have that degree. But the reality is, if you look at it, is that you can be smart as hell if you want, but if you don't have the operational people that understand the operation, you'll never have a business. So let's say, for example, right, and this is not to take nothing away from anyone, let's just look at a restaurant, right? You could be the restaurant owner because you're business savvy and you open a restaurant, but you still need that chef. You still need that waiter. You still need that waitress. And it doesn't mean that those people aren't regular human beings. It doesn't mean that those people are low-life human beings because they're waiter, because they're waitress. Those people might just be at their beginning stages of becoming the next entrepreneur, and they just need something to pay the bill. Or some of those people probably didn't have the opportunity that was afforded to you. You understand? And, you know, that might be the only way for them to make a living. And also, some people that do it might be a passion. So we have to also understand, as much as we need the high qualified personnel, we also need the day-to-day people that's going to make the business go around.
What about the people that say you can't become wealthy without a college degree?
I would tell them that's a bold lie, right? That's a bold lie. They want you to believe that. They want you to believe that, you know, you have to have a degree to build wealth. But the reality is, for me, I think the only degree you need is, number one, is the degree of understanding self-worth. Understand who you are as an individual. Understand your powers. Understand your capabilities. And once you understand that, those degrees, you understand yourself to that degree. I think you can see that, look, anything in this world is attainable. And I don't want to sound too cliche, like, yeah, if you put your mind to it. It's not just putting your mind to it. But look, if you're willing to bust your ass hard enough and believe in it long enough to not give up in it, eventually the world is going to open up. That's just a fact. So, no, to answer that question, no, you don't need college degree to build wealth in this country. All you need is education. Now, what is education? Does it mean necessarily that I have to have a degree? No. You can self-educate, right? For example, for me, I became a truck driver, really didn't understand the entire business, the logistics of trucking, but I self-educated myself, and I educated myself by sailing forward, right? So I was able to build multi-billion-dollar trucking companies just on sailing alone. But I was sailing with a purpose. My purpose was to never give up, was to learn as much as I can. So I think anyone can build wealth, whatever idea they have, whatever it is that they have to offer to the world. My message to them is, like, whatever it is that you have to offer to the world, do not let the world's stigma stop you from bringing it, because believe it or not, we truly need it. And you are doing the world a disservice if you feel like you can't create it or you can't build that wealth.
How did you get into trucking? Because most people can't just start off and become successful. So there has to be some path that led to you eventually being able to get that first truck.
Yes, that's a very interesting question. So even when I was a truck driver myself, and that goes back to, again, self-educating, right? I was always looking for ways to kind of build financial stability, right? So whether it was trading every day, whether it was kind of pretty much putting 50% of my check into a 401k just to make sure that I had, I had enough money to save away for a rainy day, I was doing that. So for me, while I was really on the road driving trucks every day, and once I realized how painful it was being a driver, especially when you work for a company, the way you get treated, the work is very demanding. You're working 14 hours per day. Sometimes you're on the road for 30 days. You're not seeing your family. I wanted a better way, right? So for me, it was thinking like, okay, well, how do I own my own truck? So once I started thinking, I started to become a little bit more aggressive in educating myself. How do I trade? How do I invest my money? And I did great 1 year, which is that same year that I ended up purchasing my own truck when that professor told me that. And I think I did about almost 20 grand in just about 6 months with a stock called Solar City Corp at the time. And I used that money to purchase my first truck and became an owner-operator.
And that means that you create contracts with a business and then work out what time you leave, what time you get there, how much they pay you and all that stuff.
Yeah. So when you're a truck driver, you work for a company, you pretty much have, not to say that you don't have no responsibilities, but you don't have as much overhead. When you're just a driver, let's say you work for UPS, you work for FedEx, you just show up to work, they give you your paperwork, they give you the keys, and you get the job done, right? And then you return the truck back to them. But when you're an owner-operator, you own that truck. You have to deal with higher insurance costs. You have to deal with maintenance. You have to deal with fuel. You have to deal with tolls, right? And you have to totally understand your unit economics. And that's one of the things I didn't know early on when I was an owner-operator. Didn't truly understand these things. So when you do own that truck, it is your duty to go out there and make relationship with the shippers to get loads. But there was another barrier that I realized: when you own a truck, there's a broker that sits in between that facilitates the shipment from a shipper to you. There's a person that sits in between, and that person's taking between a 20-30% cut on that load. And what I was realizing as well is, how is the system, the way it's set up in trucking, is still very fragmented and still very challenging, that I had to learn, that I had to deal with the brokers. So that's why I parked my truck up, and when I took a course to become a broker, I never opened up a brokerage firm, because the reality is, I realized that some brokers make money on drivers' ignorance. They understand that drivers don't understand certain things in the industry, so the drivers are getting screwed over. So what will end up happening is, you'll see a lot of truck drivers going out there purchasing their own truck to get freedom, because they're thinking, okay, by owning this truck, that's the only time I can dictate when I work and for whom I want to work for. But too often they realize that, hey, they don't understand those unit economics. They really don't understand the business, how it goes. And once they find out, hey, look, that broker situation is tapping into their profit margin, there's a lot of truck drivers out there hurting. So when you own that truck, it's pretty much you have to kind of put your business hat on and learn how to build those relationships with the shippers. So, yes, to answer the question in a nutshell, once you own that truck, you find the shippers, or you find the brokers that have access to the shippers, and, you know, they tell you exactly what the load is paying. And it's up to you as a driver to make the math, to break the math down to see, does that load make sense for my unit, and does that load make sense for me? But I don't want to make it sound that easy, but it's just so much more that goes beyond it to a driver actually booking a load, you understand, and getting it from point A to point B. It's so much manual process, so many paperwork, so many phone calls that goes into that process. And this is exactly why fleeting exists today. We want to change that.
Let's come back to fleeting. I want to talk to you about something you said about education.
Yeah.
Education, and you and I talked about this, but education doesn't just exist in a book at a university.
No, it doesn't.
Probably, I saw something somewhere that said, nowhere in man's history has he been more capable of teaching himself and succeeding. And it was in relation to the kids who were losing the opportunity to finish school this year because of, you know, the ongoing pandemic, and that we were going to lose almost a generation of people in parts of the country because they didn't have access to the internet and things like that. And funding had been cut for libraries, and it was overwhelmingly affecting the poor and minorities. And they said that it was a shame because never in man's history had they ever been more capable of teaching himself how to fish, if you will.
Yep.
Where did you get the knowledge?
I mean, for me, poverty. Poverty did it, right? Seeing my current circumstances did it. It's like, you know, like, you have to have enough to say, okay, look, I no longer want this to be my reality, right? You have to be bold enough mentally to tell yourself that, okay, well, my story doesn't end right here, right? Yes, it can be part of my story, but it doesn't end here. So for me, that was one thing that really drove my craziness idea of educating myself was, once again, once I made that deal with myself and said, hey, look, I refuse to be a statistic here, and I refuse to really see how I seen some of my friends, how their moms was putting teddy bears on the corner for them, lighting a candle, saying rest in peace. I made a pact with myself and said, my mother would never put a candle for my name on no street corner in Brooklyn. I refuse to be a statistic here. So that fear of being mediocre, that fear of remaining in that community was the push beyond my education. So I think as much as we don't like poverty, as much as bad it is, but we also have to understand this is where it makes men. You understand? You have to want it. You have to want it out. You won't have to want out of that poverty bad enough, believe it or not, because I can't tell you what that education looked like for somebody else, right? For somebody else, it could be something else. It can be electrician. It could be plumbing. It can be learn how to trade stocks. It could just be anything. But for me, mine was trucking, was logistics. And look where it got me. So that thing for me is, I think everyone can look at their situation, currently where they're at, what they don't like about it, what they would like to change. And, you know, you have to really be honest with yourself and start reasoning with yourself and say, okay, what is it that I can do with what I have now to start changing my situation? And once you take that first step, I think education becomes part of the process. Also, I would like to say that, you know, the process is education as well.
When did you start the staffing firm? Because I want to get to fleeting, but you said you started a staffing company as well?
Yes, I did. So when I was running my trucking company, my first, that truck that I owned, I had got into a car accident. And I was pretty much out of work for 11 months. I ended up losing my truck. My truck got repo. I had a car that I had 3 payments left on my car. I lost that car. It got repo. And I found myself right back in Brooklyn in the same ghetto community we was talking about with nothing around that time. That was around 2014. And I remember I read a book called What the CEO Wants You to Know. And my takeaway from that book was volume and profit margin. And I started thinking, okay, what is it that I can sell now, but I can sell a million of them, whether it's for 5 cents? I really couldn't come up with anything creative enough. One thing I was seeing was the glass from the beauty salons, the barbershop, you know, the bars. And I was doing the math in my head. I said, okay, well, who's cleaning those glass? I said, well, if I get 100 store, pay me $10 per glass, I said, I could make $1,000 a week. And don't mind you, I'm dead broke around that time. I have a dime in my pocket. Literally couldn't even feed my child at the time. My daughter was 5. Really couldn't feed her. So I went and told a friend. I said, hey, look, man, I'm thinking about starting this window cleaning business. He laughed. He said, man, people are going to think you a crackhead. I said, hey, you're right. He's like, yeah, because you left here. You became a truck driver. You got your own truck. And now you're coming back over here with no car, broke, talking about you cleaning windows. So people are really going to think you on drugs. I said, you know what? You're right. But at the end of the day, I said, you know what? I'm already look like I'm on drugs since I don't have no money. I said, I might as well look like a crackhead with some money. He said, okay, well, if you can get 50 stores, I'll do it with you. And I woke up the next morning and solicited the entire Brooklyn. I had about, what, 70 customers the same day, borrowed $80 from my little sister, and got some brush, got some squeegees, some towel, and really went off to the races and started cleaning glass. I'm saying this to say, right, in 3 months, I made $62K cleaning glass, and I took that money. That's how I started Matt Transport Staffing. Because me being a driver, I've always realized that trucking companies are always looking for a well-qualified, vetted CDL driver. And the CDL driver himself is always looking for a company that can give him some flexibility, treat him like a regular human being, and, you know, allow that driver some time with their family. So I said to myself, well, if I can start a company where I hire the drivers and groom them and then outsource them back to the carriers, how would that work? And December 15, I launched the company. And that first month, I did 37K in revenue. The following year, I did 786K. And the year after that, did $1.2 million in revenue.
I just want to pause on that for a second, because I truly admire the fact that you didn't stop once you caught a brick. You really just reevaluated, figured out what the next move was, and then attacked.
Yep.
Where does that type of tenacity come from?
Man, I think once again, just seeing how you climb in a ladder, right, to get out of somewhere. And then life happened, whatever happens, right? And I get hit from the car accident and then see myself again starting from scratch. The fact that you already have a taste of what it feels like to live a better life than what I used to. The fact that I had to taste what it was like to be financially free for those couple months or years, you would say, when I was an owner operator. That taste reminded me that I never wanted to settle for nothing less. And I just wanted to keep pushing and kind of get right back to that state.
How does someone know if they're an entrepreneur, or I hate to say just a worker, because I feel like that's so reductive of people who actually enjoy being part of something, because yep. We can't all be bosses. But how do you that's know true. If you're an entrepreneur or if you would prefer to be part of the team?
Man, that is a great question, what you just said, man. I think too often, man, people, we don't know how to play our position, right? So the thing is, also great entrepreneurs come from great team players, right? Great entrepreneurs are also great listeners, great followers. So for me is, I don't think there is a one set thing to say, hey, look, how do someone know they're an entrepreneur? Because you might be working for a company for 15, 10 years until you decide to become an entrepreneur. So I don't think it's just a one thing. It's like, okay, hey, look, I know I have this entrepreneur thing in my blood. But I think is that people that really become entrepreneurs are the people that really have that will to say, you know what, I can do this regardless of what happened. I'm going to give it a shot. And those are the people that aren't afraid of failing. So if you're not afraid of failing at anything, then I think it's perfectly fine to give yourself the entrepreneur title, that we all can be entrepreneur in our own journey, in our own life, right? But it's just a matter of like, okay, how do you amplify your entrepreneurship? Are you the entrepreneur that say, hey, look, I want to build businesses? You could be an entrepreneur that actually motivate people to build businesses. You could be the entrepreneur that actually, you know, show people how to build businesses. That's the entrepreneurship. I think, you know, there's so many different angles we could take with the entrepreneurship, but I think number one, it has to come from with you, with the ability to say, okay, well, I realize the problem here. I see no one is bringing a solution to it. Let me bring it. And I think that's the clear way you can identify if you have the entrepreneur spirit.
I asked that question to segue into fleeting. And from there, I want to talk about venture capitalists a little bit, but let's talk about fleeting, because it's probably something that people would have never thought of. But then once you think of it, you're like, well, why didn't anyone else ever do that? So I don't want to try and explain fleeting, because it's your baby. So tell us exactly how it worked.
Yes. So currently right now, our fleeting work is connect the CDL truck driver. Let's say we identify the driver and he downloads our app and he's in our network, the driver go through a vetting process. We make sure we check his MVR, which is motor vehicle record. We check the driver's background. We check his previous employer. We check his PSP record and also do a pre-employment drug screen on that driver. Once we know everything on that driver is checked, okay, now that driver has access to our customers. So our customers, which is Arizona IC, Betterway, Goya, and Perfect Foods, those companies, what it is that every day they have needs, whether their drivers call out or they have available assets or loads that need to be moved, but they don't have enough drivers in their circle, right? Whether, like I said, once again, that's the big problem we talk about. Drivers are quitting trucking companies like every day. So it's very hard for trucking companies to retain drivers. So yeah, so trucking companies themselves, they're right, they're spending a lot of money. They're spending between $5,000 or $10,000 to hire one CDL driver, and that driver will potentially quit in the next 90 days. So that means trucking companies are losing billions of dollars trying to recruit truckers. So for us, our platform gives those trucking companies the peace of mind that they don't have to go and spend $5,000-$10,000 to recruit a driver that will potentially quit in the next 90 days. They could tap right into our platform and request 5-10 drivers to come in and show up and get the job done. So that's the phase one as fleeting of what we were accomplished. And we launched that in July 2019. And to date, we've done about over $1.1 million in revenue. Our drivers have logged in over 36,000 hours. We've moved over about 2,300 loads for our customers. And we're still very early. But as we really build on to fleeting, we've seen the bigger opportunities. We've seen that trucking is a huge opportunity, not just for truck drivers or a big corporation. This is a huge opportunity for a regular individual like yourself that don't know anything about trucking. And what we're also doing is we're teaching the regular common man how to become an entrepreneur, how to become an investor by owning a truck and register that truck and register them as a small trucking company. And what fleeting does, we keep drivers in that truck for you, and we keep that truck running 365, 24/7. And you, as the investor, you can be at home receiving a passive income while our drivers are driving your truck. What makes this more interesting is that, number one, we're showing the drivers that driving the truck, but they're not driving for a big corporation that don't care about them. They're actually driving for a regular common folk that are on the same level playing field with them. So I think it brings much more connection between the drivers and the person that owns the truck. So that's what we're working on right now as far as the future of fleeting. We want to become the very first virtual trucking company, manages thousands or hundreds of thousands of assets, but we want those assets to be owned by regular individual, by regular entrepreneurs like yourself and myself and my peers. And, you know, everyone can receive their passive income. What would you do if you're receiving a passive income of $3,000 up to $4,000 per month, and you don't have to leave out your house to make that $4,000? You understand? What other educational tool would you apply that $4,000 to? So this is how we actually thinking about amplifying fleeting and bringing more opportunities, especially when we talk about the truck driver shortage that they have in the trucking U.S. If you look at North America, I mean, you have neighborhoods, you have communities, there's young men that don't have no way out, committing crimes, selling drugs for a living, whether they're young, black, yellow, Hispanic, Asian, whatever it is, those young individuals don't have an opportunity. If we didn't want to create that bridge and give those young individuals the early opportunity to become truck drivers and make decent money. I've made great money as a truck driver. And right now, our drivers are making $1,000 a week working 3 days. Can you imagine if I go into any impoverished community and take 100 young men out of those communities and teach them CDL and give them a job? What would that look like for our economy? What would that look like for our society? So that's the big picture behind fleeting. Hope I didn't take too much of your time by explaining all of this.
Nah. That's not a small idea, though. That's not
something, not at all.
You know, we just playing spades one day and I say, yo, let's get a truck and tell somebody to drive it for us and we'll sit back. That's something that you had to be like building to. Where does that come from? Like, how does the idea become a thing of action?
Yes. So when I used to run my staffing agency, right, that was another dream that I've had, was to own a large fleet of trucks, right? I wanted to own like at least 500-600 trucks. So I took the proceeds from my first company and I started another company called JPNL Transportation. That company I started with about 3 trucks and grew that company to about 16 trucks in 6 months, right? And also had an additional 10 owner operators working for me. So I was managing 2 companies simultaneously by myself. I was managing a staffing agency with 45 drivers, and I was also managing a trucking company with 26 trucks, right? And what I realized is all the truck drivers that I've had that was working for me, number one, all of them were a little older than me, number one, and they had their own businesses. And they was always saying like, man, like you so young to be doing this. Like, you know, what was the push? And when I explained to them that me, myself, when I was a driver, when I remember used to tell my family that I was going to be home a certain time and really couldn't make it. And I realized that when I purchased my own truck and became an owner operator, the money that I was making, I said, wait, hold up. Actually, you really don't need to have or be a driver to make money in trucking. Because I myself was also thinking that, you know, it's very hard to own a truck. Only big corporations get to own trucks. But once I went through the process and see how easy it was for me to get a truck or even finance a truck, I also realized, like, man, this is actually a lot easier. Once I also understand the entire business in trucking, I think this is where all those ideas came together and said, okay, well, how do I put two and two together and create a much more scalable business that can not only brings value to me as a driver, but, you know, and other drivers, but how can I build something that actually brings value to the entire supply chain space? And outside of that, how do I add value to the regular consumers that are consuming every day, but using transportation logistics for the thing that they're consuming, but they're not reaping the benefits of transportation? So that's the reason the idea came out. I said, well, we go to the supermarket all the time. We buy beds, furniture for our home, we buy clothes. Everything we buy, a trucking company has to bring it in. Why not invest in that same tool that's bringing the stuff that you consume every day? So that's where the idea came in and said, well, we can now turn regular individuals into investors in trucking because they are consumers every day. So how do we bring that? It did come with a lot of thinking, a lot of strategic thinking, and still, we still very early, right? Like you said, this is a big, big goal. This is not a private jet that you're trying to get off the ground. This is a Boeing, I would like to call it. It's not only number one that you have to get it off the ground. Number two, you have to keep that sucker off the ground. So that's going to require a lot of work. It's going to require a lot of capital. And when I say a lot of capital, not to say that we're very capital intensive, where we're not profitable, but I'm saying as far as capital, to where to hire the right talent, to hire the right team, to do the right acquisition with the customers and the drivers to be able to build this, is where we're thinking is not only capital, but we also understand that it's going to take a community to build this, right? Nothing great is being built by just one man alone. It requires an entire village. It requires an entire community. So this is why when I speak about Fleeting and tell people, like, hey, look, we welcome the entrepreneur. We welcome the person that's just curious about trucking that want to know, because that's how we build that community. And by building that community, we'll always have the ability to build a gigantic company because it will serve the people that's actually building it every day.
Throughout our conversation and even before we started recording, a lot of the things you've said have always come back to building the community and uplifting the community and helping people grow. Why is that so important?
Man, that's a good question. Why is that important? When I was a driver, right, I used to literally go to trucking companies and asking companies to meet their CEOs and see if I could be an intern for them for free. And then somehow, it was always hard, and it was always a hard no, right, for me to do it. And I'm like, man, and the thing about it, the reason I keep talking about that is I live in impoverished communities, and what I've realized is not every young man or woman in those communities want to be there. They're there because they didn't have a choice. They're there because they don't have a way out. So when I talk about building communities, when I talk about that is because I've lived with people that wanted better than what they were dealt with. But they just didn't have a way out. So for me, I feel like it is my moral duty, it's my moral responsibility to be in the position that I am in today, to be able to bring back the knowledge, everything that I've learned, even if it's my personal story. I think it is my duty to bring that to that community, to those communities, to show them like, hey, look, I was able to pick myself up from that community and made millions of dollars. You understand? By deciding to leave and do this. And I want to remind them that they can do it. Not only now that they can do it, but they can also now do it with a support system that I didn't have myself.
So we're going to help the community. We're going to help people build wealth. We're going to, and I'm about to ask you a big picture question that probably, I don't even know if it's fair to ask, but how do we take that wealth and help other people become wealthy?
Yes, like this is the best way to get what you want in life is helping other people get as much as what they want, correct? So the thing is, if we know wealth is what it is that we truly need, the question is, how do we help as much people acquire that same wealth, right? So we understand there's power in numbers, right? So for us is really, how do we go about teaching those people, right, the importance of not only them coming in to get the education, but also the importance of them spreading that on. Like, for example, I have people that have reached out to me on my DM saying, hey, Pierre, I'll pay you $1,000 per hour to mentor me to do this, to build this company, to do X, Y, and Z. And you know what I tell them? I said, you know what? I'm extremely busy. I can make some time on a Sunday. I'll walk you through everything and get you going. You don't have to pay me. Just pay it forward. What I mean by that is, you know, is that it's going to be another brother that's going to look for the opportunity. It's going to be another sister. Like, when I say brother and sister, once again, it's not just limiting to, you know, to us. Like, you understand? I'm talking about all the minorities. I'm talking about all the people that's been pretty much victimized of this brutalized system. When we talk about, like, yo, pass it forward to another entrepreneur, pass it forward to the next, to the person next to you, the brother or the sister sitting next to you, that's a strong message. For example, look at this, right? Chameleonaire invested in our company. Arlen Hamilton invested in our company. They're both black investors. We have Hustle Fund that invested in our company. All these investors, right? We have white, Asian, black, all types of investors that invested in Fleeting. Now, just yesterday, one of our colleagues, Mina, shout out to Mina, which is director of operation and lead at Fleeting, came with this initiative and said, hey, look, Fleeting, we're going to launch this future fund for Fleeting. And we're going to donate $1,000 to any black entrepreneurs out there that's, you know, building any businesses, whether they want to become a truck driver, they want to get into anything. He's putting the first $1,000. And I said, you know what, Mina, this is a great initiative. As a CEO, I feel like it is my moral responsibility to do that. I'm matching that with another $1,000. So I'm saying that to say, if I didn't have those investors that invested in me to build Fleet into where it's at today, would I be in a position today to say now we can donate $1,000 per entrepreneur, right? Would I be in a position? No, I would never be in a position to do that. So that means I'm grateful for the people that paved the way for me, that believed in my mission, that invested in it. So what they did, they allowed me to see the bigger picture in another individuals and believe in them. So if we can keep passing that message along, I think it can go a long way and we can start really seeing some changes in our community.
Two-part question. One, I think we left it on the table, but how do people get involved in Fleeting? And two, and this is probably going to be a much longer answer, but if I was coming to you with a business idea, let's say I had the best meatloaf in the city, and I knew it was time for me to go out and start my first food cart.
Yep.
I can't just show up and say, I made meatloaf. Let me get some bread so I can make a food cart. Somebody has to come to you with more than just the idea. Speak to that.
Yes. So that's the thing, right? So it's the same thing for me. When I go speak to an investor about this Fleeting idea, my investors expect me to do my research on the entire market, right? Understand exactly what is the opportunity, right? What is the problem? What is my solution? And why my solution is better than any other companies out there if there is competition. So I think it's very important that we understand as future entrepreneurs or you want to build businesses is, you know, it's great. Number one, the fact that you say, hey, look, I'm going to do this is the very number one first step. So you should congratulate yourself. But number two, it is very important that we do our research on what it is that we say that we're going to do. Like, you understand? So we need to understand what is it going to cost me to do one meatloaf? How much I'm going to sell one meatloaf? Who is my ideal customer that's going to buy this meatloaf? These are the things that we need to ask ourselves as an entrepreneur before we say, hey, look, we're going to do anything. But I think once we have all these answers and you have a clear strategic way of how you're going to penetrate that market, if it's an existing market or if it's a new market that you're creating, then I think this is where you yourself have to be creative enough to know that, okay, if I'm going to ask someone for help and they're going to take their time out to help me on this venture, it is also my duty to do my homework because that person that's going to help me is actually taking their time out of their busy day. And you don't want to come to that person half-assed, right? And it's the same thing with me with our investors is when we come to them and say, hey, look, we raising X, Y, and Z, they want us to have all the research. They don't want to go and do no research for us and say, hey, look, and if they find out that certain things about the industry that they knew about and I didn't know about it, that could be a red flag. So for me, again, that part is where whatever business that we decided to go into, whatever it is that we decided to get into, we really need to ask ourselves, okay, what is the end goal here for doing this? What am I solving? Why am I doing this? Number one is the why. Why is very important to why you're doing it, because why is the reason that's going to keep you going when things get tough. And the reality is things is going to get tough. So first you have to recognize that why. And then truly understand who, what, when, and how you're going to sell your services. And once you have that down, I think you're pretty much in a better position to now ask for help, because now at least I don't feel like, hey, look, I'm just giving my help to somebody that's not even going to make the effort to go do their own simple research that they need to do in order to start a business. And also, let me share something on that real quick, too. I'm sorry. We live in the information age, right? There's no way no one can say, hey, look, they was lazy enough and not to do any research on any particular market. Because now we all have our phone in our hand. Everything is information age. So I speak about that all the time, is that information can always change the situation. So if you're going to be an entrepreneur, going to start a business, your job is to make sure that you become an information junkie first.
I was just going to ask, like, if I have the meatloaf idea and I come to you and you say, no, it's not a good idea, you haven't thought through X, Y, Z,
But I would never say it's not a good idea, right? There's no such thing as it's not a good idea. I might say, hey, look, maybe this is not where I want to allocate my time. Maybe this is not where, hey, look, if I'm an investor, maybe this may not be where I want to invest. But no one should tell anyone, like, yeah, this is not a good idea. To me, I think, like, that's killing dreams. And you don't ever want to be that person that told somebody, like, yeah, this is not a good idea. And then when they execute and they came back, because it happens a lot of times. And I could tell you stories about big companies, that's multi-billion-dollar companies right now, that, you know, investors told them, nah, that's not a good idea. This is not going to work. And look at those companies now. So I always want to refrain myself from telling someone that, hey, look, this is not a good idea. More than likely, I would say maybe my approach would be much more like, where are you at right now and what type of help you need? And once I understand that, then I could direct you and say, okay, maybe you need to do this research first before we really dive into everything. Right. So for me, I want to kind of have a clear understanding of where you at, how you're thinking about your business. But my goal is to never tell you that it's not a good idea. There's no such thing as it's not a good idea. I could show you what's not a good idea. They're all over there 6 feet deep at the cemetery. Those are not good ideas because they never brought them out and they didn't have the chance to bring them out.
I think you might have answered my question, but I think I was going to say, like, if I've put 5 years into it and it's just not, like, nobody's buying meatloafs. Like, I've been all over the city with new spots and new promotions. How do I pull the plug? How do I know that it's just not working?
Yes. Oh, man, that is a good question, right? Because sometimes it's very hard, right? So I think this is where, again, it takes the grit part, right? You have to have the grit and you have to be honest with yourself and you have to be bold enough to now go and speak to your potential people that you were selling to and start finding out why they didn't buy your meatloaf. Because guess what? You probably been selling your meatloaf to a bunch of vegans. You understand? So now it's like, once you go back and really start digging in, like, okay, why is anyone buying my meatloaf? What is it? My seasoning? Do I put something in there that's caused a allergic reaction? Is it because that people are against eating meat? Like, you have to really find out the reason why nobody wouldn't want to buy that. Now, once you start putting those two together, now let's say, okay, now you realize, like, oh man, my audience was all vegan. And also, well, this next audience right here, they didn't like the seasoning because it has an allergic reaction to it. It goes back again to understand your business, to understand your audience. And once you do that, now, if you understand all of that and it's not selling, yes, there's times you have to kind of look at the numbers to say, okay, well, you know what? Maybe meatloaf wasn't my strong point. But once again, it doesn't mean that you are a failure. Just because that one idea didn't work, right? It doesn't mean that you ain't worth nothing because that first idea didn't work. So people have to understand the difference between failure and temporary defeat. Now, this is what I would call temporary. Yeah, you got defeated at one idea. Now, what's the next one? You understand? Are you going to stop at the meatloaf? Or now you're going to say, you know what? Hell with it. People didn't want to buy my meatloaf. Now I'm selling turkey wings. And that's what you have to look for in an entrepreneur. The person that said, okay, well, I made the meatloaf. Damn, nobody bought it. You know, I spent a lot of money. But you know what? I'm going to hustle. I'm going to sell hot dogs right now for now so I can start another turkey wing business. That's how you have to think about it. And this is why the why is important. So remember, the why of you going into the business wasn't just to build, to sell meatloaf. Meatloaf was the part of the process, the vehicle for you to attain that end goal. And your end goal could have been financial freedom. But you chose meatloaf as your vehicle to get to the financial freedom. So now you realize, like, okay, well, meatloaf ain't it. How do I find the next vehicle? And you just have to keep trying and keep going until you find that vehicle, and it's there.
How do they get in contact with you to become part of Fleeting?
Yeah, so there's several ways people can become part of Fleeting now. Are they talking about becoming an investor into Fleeting? Or are they talking about being part of the community so they can become entrepreneurs themselves? So I'll answer that both ways. So we also have a live campaign on republic.co/Fleeting, which is republic.co/Fleeting. Which is a crowdfunding platform that allows regular individuals the opportunity to invest in early emerging tech companies without having the accredited investor title, right? As we all know, a lot of opportunities are pretty much only reserved for accredited investors, angel investors, and you have to have at least, you know, $1 million in net worth or at least $200,000 a year in salary to be an accredited investor. What Republic does, it allowed a regular individuals like you and I the opportunity to invest in early emerging companies so we can own a percentage of the company prior to the company going IPO. So this is how all the investors make money. Just like a post I did last night, I was just showing people the list of investors that invested in Uber prior to them going IPO. There's people that invested $5,000 that made $25 million return. People invested $25,000 and made $124 million return. So that's what Republic does. It allows the regular individual the opportunity to invest in Fleeting. And that's www.republic.co/Fleeting. Now, if you want to be part of the community, you want to become an entrepreneur, you want to support in any how you can, whether with your talent, whether it's your network, you can check us out at www.fleetingpro.com/community. It's www.fleetingpro.com/community. And you can find me on LinkedIn. Name is Pierre Laguerre, P-I-E-R-R-E. Laguerre is L-A-G-U-E-R-R-E. And it's the same name on Instagram. It's Pierre_Laguerre5. Pierre is P-I-E-R-R-E. Laguerre is L-A-G-U-E-R-R-E5. That's how people can get in touch. And I'm reopened. Like I said, we want to build this community. Our goal is to have 1 million people in this community. And that's a mix of people, young entrepreneurs, millennials, LGBTQ, truck drivers, existing truck drivers, entrepreneurs. The goal for us in 2022 is to have 1 million people in our community using our platform.
What does the next 5 years hold for you?
Man, that's a great question, right? I wish I really can look into the future and say, hey, look, you know what? But at the end of the day, I do have a plan. So for me, the plan in the next 5 years, once again, is to build the very first virtual trucking company, allowing truck drivers the full capability of being able to create their schedule and work on the terms that works for them, and also giving truck drivers the ability to travel and explore America where it doesn't feel like work. What we want to do is we want to give truck drivers the ability to send an invite to one of their driver friends to actually do a load from Jersey to California with them, and they get to explore. And also, we want to build the very first free trucking school where we want to teach millennials, LGBTQ communities, a lot of the women, how to become truck drivers. So the next 5 years look very bright for us. And I know sometimes I may sound too bold, but hey, you know what? You have to be bold. We really looking forward to building over a $20 billion company in the next 5 years, 10 years.
I want you to come back because I feel like we've only scratched the top of the iceberg.
Yes.
There's so many different things that are happening in the world right now that, you know, it's just like something positive, somebody out here trying to uplift is really an amazing thing. And we're happy that you stopped by to share that with us. Look, you're part of the family now, so.
Yes.
You got to come
so,
back.
So is you guys.
Yeah, you owe us now.
Absolutely.
You know how family just be asking for stuff. You owe us now.
Absolutely. Hey, man, listen, I believe, you know what? To go back on that point on the five-year goal that you're saying 5 years, I think I owe everyone, to be honest with you. As a Black man, as a Black entrepreneur, as a Black CEO, right? I think, once again, it is that I have a moral duty and responsibility to teach our generation, number one, whether it's financial literacy, whether it's mental wellness. Number two, whether it's teaching them how to become entrepreneurs themselves, how to even become investors in trucking and receive passive income. These are the things that we're looking to do in the next 5 years. And eventually, I'm even thinking about launching our own fund in the next 6 months to a year. And that also, that is a fund. We will call it the People's Fund. And that's a fund that will kind of actually allow us young individuals to start learning the power of early investing in early emerging tech companies. So we want to bring mentors around. We want to bring existing investors to the table and teach our people, how do they become VCs? How do they become, you know, investors? What is it that they need to learn to be investors? So we want to launch that. We trying to push for our first $3 million fund. And that fund is going to be definitely to go around and invest in a lot of entrepreneurs. That's the LGBTQ community, the women community, especially the Black women community, as you can see that they're killing it out there with your entrepreneurship, especially, you know, the young Black man community, especially in our community. I think, once again, I have a moral responsibility and duty to speak up and bring those opportunities to those brothers and sisters that are looking for, that are desperately looking for a way out. But unfortunately, that we live in a system that tell them that, you know, their life doesn't matter, that tell them that, you know, they don't deserve to have equality. They don't deserve to have financial stability. And I feel like, regardless of what I've been through myself, and I think somebody kept telling me that also, which is our COO, Paul, I just want to give him a shout out. And he said, Pierre, that story, which you went through, which is, I don't even think I told you the story with my head, with my injury. But he said, Pierre, you holding that story to yourself and not showing these young individuals how to think, like critically think and think strategically, is that you're doing a disservice to yourself and you're doing a disservice to the community and you're doing a disservice to us as a team. So he is right. And I want to put myself more out there. I want to reach out to brothers and sisters, however I can help, because I remember I was in a place myself where I needed a lot of help, and I still need a lot of help. I'm nowhere near there, right? So, but I do think with the idea of, hey, look, we all can learn together, each one teach one. I truly believe that, you know, I have a job here to do, and I accept the challenge. I've accepted all the duties, and I want to put myself out there and learn more and educate our people and build that fund so we could go out there and invest in a lot of early emerging Black entrepreneurship.
Tell everybody how they can reach you.
Yes, everyone can reach me again. On Instagram is Pierre_Laguerre5. On LinkedIn is just Pierre Laguerre. You want to invest in Fleeting as an early investor, you don't have to invest $50,000, $100,000, or $500,000 like our traditional investors do. You can invest $100, $200, $1,000, and you can find us on republic.co/Fleeting. And if you want to be part of this community, guys, which we will welcome you to be part of this community, we want you, we need you in this community to actually build this. You can find us at www.fleetingpro.com/community. Send me a message. Let's get in touch. We'd love to hear what you guys are working on and how can we help? How can we put our help together and create a true equitable ecosystem for all?
Now, I'm going to ask you one last question, and depending on how you answer, we may have beef. I'm not 100% sure. Who's the greatest rapper for Brooklyn?
Oh, come on, bro. Come on. So put it this way. I came here in 1997, right? So around the time, I think Biggie has just died, right? And I was in Haiti, and Biggie was what we grew up to in Haiti. Although I didn't know no English, but I knew there was this big, fat, Black dude in Brooklyn that was nice. And since I am a Brooklyn dude all the way to the core, bro, I'm going to have to give it with Biggie, man. I'm sorry.
All right. I mean, that's an acceptable answer. A lot of people would say that Jay might be the biggest rapper from Brooklyn, but I don't think you'd go wrong either way.
Nah, you know what? That's true. You can't go wrong either way. Now, if we're talking about in today's time, right? Yes, absolutely. Then we both can agree that it is Jay-Z. But if we're talking about, like, hey, look, on the borough side, like, okay, hey, look, you from the borough, we all know, man, Biggie got that.
I heard somebody say recently that, rest in peace, that he was gone before he could make a bad album.
Wow, that's a good way. Wow.
I just stared. Like, what do you say to that?
Wow, for real. Wow. Like, that is crazy.
They said that all of our rappers who started off great, like, I love Snoop. I do. But, we can all admit that his later production wasn't as good as the first stuff. Yep. But they said that all the rappers had long enough to, you know, start putting out duds, and Biggie didn't. And that's why we view him so greatly. And once again, I just stared. I don't know what to say to that.
That is very true. But if in the context you just put it, just like, I have nothing to say. Like, that one right here would just shut me up. You're right.
So I'm going to leave you that. I really appreciate you. We're going to do this again. We're going to do hip hop next time. We're going to do 50 minutes on the best rappers from New York.
Let's make it happen, man. I definitely would love to be part of that. And if there's one message, man, I want to leave your community with, I want to leave your peoples, your followers with, I just want to say, hey, look, guys, we can. We can change. You understand? The best thing ever invented in this world is another 24 hours, guys. With another 24 hours, we could make a better decision and we could start changing our trajectory. So let's go with this mindset. We can change. We can change our environment. We can change our biology. We can change our results. And let's start doing now. That change starts with us. Nobody else can do it for us. That change has to come in internally. And I challenge every last one of you guys to think internally, think about that change and how and what we need to do in order to bring that change out.